Dispatch Boy. Overlooking Phoenix. From high above in the Star Worldwide Network studios. Badge Boys. Stories, insight, guests, and true blue humor with retired police sergeant Darren Birch and retired police officer Jason Schechterly. And now, here they are, the Badge Boys.
Welcome to another edition of the Badge Boys, where two cops talk to the community. I'm retired silent witness sergeant Darren Birch.
I'm retired Phoenix Police Detective Jason Schechterly.
And we have an incredible episode. We have an episode that may very well save your life as a first responder. We have a cop and a fireman talking about the toxic nature of society today as first responders. We go to various calls. Then we go to Cop Talk, where we're going to talk about the massacre in Mexico. 9 innocent lives snuffed out. Was this a targeted attack or wrong place, wrong time? The last segment, we're going to talk about stupid suspect stories galore. We're going to have heroic headlines and so much more. So stay tuned, stay informed, and most of all, you're going to be entertained.
More stories, inside guests, and true blue humor coming up on Badge Boys. We'll be back right after this.
I remember the moment. I'll never forget that moment.
As long as I live.
As long as I live.
Several of us were working to rescue a family.
The house collapsed on top of the cellar door and trapped them.
We had to use Humvees and heavy machinery to move massive trees and debris.
We got them out.
We helped a lot of people out.
It felt good to know I could really make a difference.
Because I'm a citizen soldier in the National Guard.
Be there the moment your community needs you. Learn more at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Arizona National Guard. Aired by the Arizona Broadcasters Association and this station.
Move over, AZ. Arizona's move over law requires you to move over or slow down when you drive past any vehicle pulled over with flashing lights. Remember, every vehicle, every time. Move over, AZ.
Sponsored by ADA in partnership with the Arizona Broadcasters Association and this station.
You're listening to Badge Boys with retired police sergeant Darren Birch and retired police officer Jason Schechterly. Now, back to the Badge Boys.
Jason, we have a really important interview today. We have a cop from Surprise. We have Greg Welch, Surprise PD. We have a former fireman, Ed Cunningham. We're going to talk about industrial cancer, all the toxic nature of our job, both firemen and police. So without further ado, I want to introduce... First, we're going to go with our police, because police is more important than fire.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, there's three cops in the room, and one firefighter, so...
I'm sorry, Ed, we outnumber you, buddy.
You guys know what police and fire all have in common, right?
I'm waiting for this.
They all want to be firefighters.
You know what? Just this morning.
God made firemen. Excuse me. See, I blew it all right. God made police so that firemen had something to look up to.
Oh, I like the way you were going in the first place.
I will admit, I just did a speech this morning to 5 different high schools' police and fire science classes, and I asked everybody, who wants to be a cop? A bunch of hands went up. I said, who wants to be a firefighter? A bunch of hands went up, and I looked at all the kids want to be cops. I said, be firefighters.
You know, I'll say it's an easier job, but then we'll find out. Maybe it's not.
No.
We're going to bring in Greg here. Greg, tell us a little bit about your career, if you would, sir.
So I've been an officer for just under 24 years. I started with the town of Wickenburg, which is my hometown.
Oh, wow.
And so I spent a little under 6 years there, and I came to Surprise in 2001. And that's where I plan to retire here in just a couple years.
Very good. And you work in patrol?
No, I'm actually the supervisor over our community relations unit now.
Oh, and, good for you.
So I supervise our community relations, our school resource officers, and I'm also one of our PIOs.
Gotcha. Having said that, you probably work patrol. And how long did you work patrol?
I worked patrol for about 12 years, and then I went into criminal investigations, internal affairs, and then into my current role.
And as a reason I keep going back to patrol, because it just seems like both detective work as well as patrol, we find ourselves in precarious situations where we're surrounded by blood, airborne pathogens, you name it. But even in patrol, when we're getting that flare out to help out with that 961, that traffic accident, we're exposed ourselves to all sorts of carcinogenic toxic materials. And I bring this up because you're going to share a very personal, candid, and as Jason says, we just love it when we're vulnerable. And so I do thank you, sir, for coming on this show to talk about something that is happening to you currently. Am I right?
Yes. So You're right. We're exposed to a number of different things throughout our careers. I think all four of us sitting here have been exposed at one point in time. And particularly with me, on April 24th, 2018, I walked out of a doctor's office.
Take your time, my friend. What we're talking about is cancer.
Yep.
And so many of us are exposed to it. And in life, in my family, my mom, my father,
my dad,
brother, dad.
Everybody is affected by
it. You cannot throw a rock without hitting someone that's affected by cancer.
But again, Darren said the vulnerability of the show, and please, Bud, take your time. If you had listened to last week's show, we had Robin in tears for 15 straight minutes talking about sexual assault. That's what this show is for, and we're going to help a lot of people. And we are in no hurry, so you take your time, and I'm already deeply appreciative of what you're doing for everybody.
Well, this is a tough topic for me.
Absolutely, sir.
Just last week, I found out I was cancer-free.
Oh, so, my. Okay, round of applause. Right, I did not know that.
Yeah, the 25th, my wife and I went into our doctor's office, and he told me that I'd gone a year without any testing, and so it was pretty dang emotional.
I love that. I love you. That's called the end. The end is you're cancer free. That's such great news. Can you take us to the day when you found out of the blue?
April 24th. Right. We started with the beginning of the book, and we went straight to the end.
I love starting with a happy ending.
Now we
got to
fill
that
in some pages here.
So I'll tell you. So with my journey, it's going to be one of the best dang kidney stone stories you're ever going to hear. And there are no good kidney stone stories.
No. I've never had one. I don't even want to. I don't know if that's the least favorite part of this topic.
You don't want one.
Trust me.
I'd rather pass gas, no doubt about it.
So in March of 2018, about 2:30 in the morning, I woke up with some severe pain, and I knew it was a kidney stone. I had had a kidney stone back in 04, 05. And you just never forget that pain.
I've heard that.
So I woke my wife up about 3 o'clock in the morning, and I told her, I said, honey, you need to get up for a minute. And I told her, I said, I think I'm having a kidney stone, and it's bad. You may have to take me to urgent care real quick. So she got up, and I walked into the bathroom. And at that point, my heart rate skyrocketed. My temperature skyrocketed. And I could start seeing the blackness come. I was going to pass out.
Wow.
And so I told her, I said, you need to call the paramedics. And I made a beeline for our closet because that's the only place that had carpet. And I figured if I'm going down, I better at least try and find someplace a little soft.
Yeah.
So I flopped down in the closet and flopped over on my back, and I kicked my knees up because I just closed my eyes and I started really focusing on my breathing. And she called paramedics, and believe it or not, they were there. Super quick, so quick that I thought, heck, did I black out and just come to, and they're here?
Wow!
And
so what we do?
It just so happens they were a block away, walking out of a house when my wife called. So they drove right around
gym,
the corner.
Okay.
Nice.
Now we have those in our stations.
You know, I hadn't had a kidney stone in a number of years, so I thought, you know what, I should probably just go get checked, and so. Just routine check, and April 24th, 2018, you know, I walked into a doctor's office. I had taken the afternoon off, and my wife had taken the afternoon off because it was our son's last home golf match as a senior. And so I was going to go to the doctor and then meet my wife back at the house so that we could go spend the day with our son. And boy, I tell you, the doctor said, you know what? Yeah, you've got a little kidney stone in your right kidney. It's not a huge thing. It's going to pass, but your left one's screwed. You've got cancer. And I sat back in my chair and I went, what?
Last thing in the world you expected.
Had absolutely no clue. And I said, are you screwing with me? And he goes, I wish I was. But you need to get in to see our surgeon immediately. And I went, what? Immediately, he's like, yeah, your mass is big. And so...
life changes
instantly.
In an instant.
Huge.
In an instant.
Huge. I didn't even know. So at that point, I had never had even a broken bone. I'd never had surgery. I'd never had a medical issue. And here I am, 46 years old, walking out of a doctor's office with a death sentence.
And no cancer in the family, if I recall correctly.
None whatsoever. I checked with my mom, my dad, both sides of the family. No cancer. Have no idea where this came from, but it was out of left field.
Well, not to jump too far ahead, it sounds to me like that kidney stone that hurt like hell
saved your life.
It absolutely did.
Because that kidney stone doesn't happen in your right one. Left one goes undiagnosed until it's too late.
Until it's too
late. That is the kind of stuff that, man, that's hard to wrap your mind around right there.
So it was clearly a blessing from God.
Well, I'll say.
Because I tell you what. So in all of this journey, some of the things that we learned is that on average with kidney cancer, the doctors will find the mass, and they're usually between 3 and 3.5 centimeters. Mine was 7.3.
Wow.
They were afraid that mine was going to rupture
anytime,
and that it was going to flood my system with the cancer. Luckily for me, I mean, it was placed in the ideal spot. It was on the back of my kidney. It had plenty of room to grow. It didn't attach to any of my other organs, and it hadn't penetrated the wall into the functioning portion of the kidney. So it was butted right up against it. So at any point in time, this thing could have ruptured. And that's why the doctor said, we need to get you into surgery pretty quick.
And remove the whole kidney or just the tumor?
So
live on one kidney.
So you can. There's a couple different ways that they can do it. They can, depending on the size and location of the tumor, they can remove a portion of the kidney along with the cancerous tumor, and you'll be able to survive with a partial kidney and one fully functioning. Unfortunately for me, the mass was just too big. So on June the 5th, I went into surgery, and they removed my entire left kidney along with the mass. And so they were able to, the surgeon bags it up and basically cuts it out in case that thing ruptures. You know, it ruptures in the bag. So we walked, I spent about 3 days in the hospital, and came home, and it was a little bit of a crazy ride.
I bet it was. Talk a little bit about, I'm going to use the word denial, and use any word you want, but you shared with me a story about when you left that doctor's office and you met with your wife and your son. Tell us a little bit about that.
So I told you guys that, you know, this was the day that I was diagnosed was my son's last home golf match. And we had plans to go out there just to hang out, see his last golf match, and you know, because this was
family.
This was the, yeah, absolutely. And so I walked out of that doctor's office, and I sat in my car, and I was just dumbfounded. I didn't even know what to think. And so our son at the time was 18. Our daughters were 3 and 5.
And so you end up going to that event, and you said nothing.
Right.
Because that's what a dad will do.
How do you tell them that?
That's what a dad will do.
Yes, thank you.
That's exactly what a dad will do.
So my wife came home, and she's like, hey, how'd the doctor's visit go? I said, it's fine. I got a little stone in my right kidney. It'll pass. And she goes, oh, that's great news.
Now, you're not lying to her. You just still have not figured out how to...
No, I'm straight up lying to her.
Yeah. No.
Thank you.
What I'm saying is, and I'm going back to a lot of things in police work, not just denial. There is an overwhelming...
To protect them?
When you know that you have the power to completely change somebody else's life forever, and you're talking about your own children or your wife, that's what I'm saying. You weren't really you're probably trying to come to terms in your mind. How do I? You can't just go, oh, well, good, I have cancer. That's not how you talk, right?
Right.
So I'm trying to go through, because I can't even picture you were healthy, and all of a sudden you have to tell your family
the worst news
possible.
Hey,
we're about to go through something. I might not be here,
right,
in a year, and you got kids. So it's not necessarily. I would have been the same way. Like, no, I'm good. because I haven't figured out yet how to say it.
So how did that go?
Well, I couldn't ruin our time with our son, and that's what it came down to. You know, I sat back and, you know, sitting in that car in the parking lot of the doctor's office, I didn't know what I was going to do. I said a prayer, just I needed something. And so I got home and we had that conversation, and I luckily had about 30 minutes to myself before Sarah came
to
home.
To collect yourself.
Yeah. And so I washed my face. Oh. And, you know, I told her what I told her. I said, you know, it was fine. We went out. We enjoyed the afternoon watching our son play golf. And when he was done, we hung around just a little bit. We decided, hey, you know what, let's go meet for dinner. My mother-in-law had the girls, and so the three of us were just going to go have dinner. And we pulled out onto the road after the golf match, and I couldn't do it anymore. I started crying.
Oh,
and God. She looked at me, and she...
Take your time, my friend.
Yeah. She's like, what's wrong? And I told her, I said, honey, I'm sorry. I lied to you. I've got cancer.
I'm going to take this opportunity to segue to our firemen who saves lives. And as much as we love messing with them, we love them. You got to tell me, Ed, your experiences with the fire department and what you're doing now, because you're part of this really important ad hoc committee, and I want to hear more about that, my friend.
Well, we're it's friends like Greg that really got us into doing what we're doing with First Responder Decon.
Were you friends with Greg before this?
We've known each other for quite a while.
Okay.
Because I was with El Mirage Fire,
okay,
which is right next to Surprise. Okay. So we ran together quite a bit.
Yeah.
And I was familiar with his story. But we've lost a lot of friends to cancer.
Yeah.
And it's starting to become more than just cancer. It's job-related illnesses. We're looking at early-onset Alzheimer's, early-onset dementia, even the heart disease that we in the fire service thought was killing us because of being out of shape. It was really because of stuff like arsenic and cyanide that we're finding out there.
Yeah, because firemen are really out of shape.
Yeah.
We try not to be. But yeah, we found that it's more than that. It's not even one exposure. Like one of the worst questions. So this ad hoc committee, Senator Rick Gray had reached out to me and said, "Hey, I'd like you to come attend this and see what's going on." Senator Bob Boyer is championing this. We have some incredible people like
them.
Brian Jeffries with the Phoenix Fire, who's huge with the union. This is a great committee made up of everyone from doctors to the senators, the people we need actually doing the work to protect us. And it's expanding out because of the awareness of cancer in the fire service. It's now rippled out into the police service, and we even had Southwest Gas has reached out to us and said, hey, we have people
good for them
that come on scene after you guys are done.
Thank you.
And so we've been working with Southwest Gas to create a kit for them as well for their exposures. But there's a ripple effect from the things that we're learning. One of the interesting things that came out, and this is really where it applies to police officers, and there's first off, there is not enough being done for studies on work-related illnesses, especially cancer, for police officers. There's hardly anything being done really for firefighters. It's just ramping up. But there is nothing being done. I know almost...
It's not even a dialogue.
No. Nobody is even... You guys are on the same scene with us that we're on a fire. You guys are, you know, monitoring traffic. You're monitoring people. You're even
control,
helping us.
Absolutely.
Sometimes you're the first ones on scene, uh-huh, and you run in.
Many times.
Yeah, a lot. Yeah.
And there's nothing being done to document these exposures.
Nothing. There's no paperwork that we have. At least when I retired.
So you look at someone like Greg, no history of cancer in his family. Genetically, there's no
not predisposed
affinity for it. Sure. And suddenly he gets cancer, you know, after almost 20 years of service on a police force. So one of the interesting things is Tucson Fire and the University of Arizona have been doing a study for the last few years. And all the firefighters that volunteered all did a kind of a prelim blood work to see where they were at to give them a baseline. And then after every fire, they gave a urine and a blood sample after every fire.
Love
to
it.
See the increases in the toxins that were in the blood, especially in the urine, because that's where your body tries to filter out a lot of the stuff that you inhale and whatnot. But one of the odd things, and this is where the study is going to ripple out into the police department, was they were showing there was a higher concentration of these toxins in the blood and urine of the engineer and the paramedics who were on scene outside of the fire than there were of the people that went into
on the outer perimeter.
Yeah.
That's, I mean,
in the what we call the warm / cold zone.
Yeah.
And that's where the police officers are. There was actually a higher, because they're not turning out, they're not putting on respirators, the paramedics are sitting there over by the ambulance stage just in case something happens.
Because they're in this supposed safe zone.
Safe zone.
They're actually in an unhealthier environment.
Yeah, well, I mean, because they're not protected. Because when I go interior in a fire, I'm wearing, my full gear, my SCBA, I'm completely
protected.
And that's the other thing we're finding about for firefighters. It's not necessarily the fire and smoke that we're getting our exposure from. It's our gear.
Wow.
Our gear protects us. We come out and it is just off-gassing VOCs and it's just saturated down to – one of the problems is we're so quick to look at a pretty commercial of a duck being cleaned by dish soap and say, well, it must work on our gear.
Sure.
So we've just been using these cleaners that were actually intended for automobile and grease removal, but never really for toxic removal, which is where – when I stepped in, I said, we got to do something actually about detoxifying the gear, not just cleaning.
Because as cops, we come home, we throw it with the dirty laundry.
Oh, yeah.
And now we're exposing the rest of the clothing.
Feel bad. Most cops I know take their stuff to a dry cleaner. Now they're exposing the other people even consciously thinking about it.
The chemicals used in the dry cleaning process do nothing to detoxify. Yeah. And doesn't remove the stuff that actually goes down deep into the fibers.
So after a 30-year career, you've been wearing these uniforms, just re-exposing yourself.
Well, and you bring it home and you throw it in your home washing machine, and that stuff collects inside there. You always end up 3 or 4 or 5 years after you had a machine, you get that musky kind of smell that you can't get rid of. That's all the buildup of toxins and bacteria and stuff that's just sitting in your wash bin. All of the stuff that's out there on the market does a decent job of removal, but not a good enough job of removal and does no detoxification.
If there's a department out there, officers out there, firemen, I don't care what kind of first responder, like you said, Southwest Gas, if they want to learn more about this, where can they get a hold of you? Where can they learn more about this?
Well, you can email me at edc@firstresponderdecon.com. You can visit our website at www.firstresponderdecon.com. And we have just launched what we call the FRD LEO line of products. We do have plenty for officers, and that's everything from being able to provide services to decon jail cells to decon your cars. The compound we actually use can completely detoxify and render inert fentanyl in less than 90 seconds.
No way.
Yeah. Wow.
Yep. And it's pretty amazing stuff. And I have some pictures on there where we did El Mirage's detention center.
You may have just got a whole bunch of people's attention right now. Yeah, so what is your contact information again? Yeah. Because now they're finding their pens.
Sure. It's Ed C. So EDC at firstresponderdecon.com is my email address. And then obviously you can visit the website. We wanted to do more than just, because the problem is the mentality is let's go home at the end of shift. Instead, this is about living long and healthy into retirement now. And that's what our main mission is at our
business. So what's the best way for guys who want to care, guys like me and Darren, to get the word out about, hey, you need to, like, how do you get the documentation process going? How are you? Do you still run into red tape and chiefs and assistants who are like, that's not one of our concerns? How can somebody get the ball rolling?
That's a fantastic question. And the hard part is it's different from department to department. I've run into departments
leadership
where
to leadership.
The upper echelon were like, we are all over this. And then there's the ones where they're so entrenched in the city politics that this, because you know what the city's the most scared of? And just being real, the fiduciary stuff, the financial stuff. If this stuff were to all roll out right now, and I'm not joking, if all of this were to completely roll out and hit them at one time, cities would go bankrupt all over the United States.
Well, the evidence right here in the Valley is clear because I forgot the doctor's name, and if I knew it, I wouldn't say it very kindly, but the cities around here keep Glendale.
Captain Kevin Thompson.
They keep using a doctor who will just openly say your cancer is not related to your job. Repeatedly, he's done it for 20 years.
Well, the city pawns it off to the insurance company and says, hey, we have to do whatever the insurance company tells us. It's not the city. And the insurance company says, we're going off the city policy. And they end up with a fight amongst each other.
So until we get to a better world, you guys out there listening, you officers, you firemen, Southwest Gas, you first responders, you need to take care of yourself.
You need
to look into this because this is a whole new world we're in.
Yeah, that's well, and 9/11 should be the big thing that people look at. There people are dying 20 years later, not even quite 20 years later, and of all ages of and exposed of the exposure, and that should fall under the never forget symbol that we talk about when it comes to 9/11. It's not just the terrorism part. It's not just those who died that day. It's what happens when you're exposed, and you don't have to be exposed on that level. You can be exposed. You don't even know what you're exposed to.
It's not like
you're going to pinpoint how did I get a tumor on the back of my kidney, but if it's not genetic and it's not, there's nothing in the family, then it's pretty easy to say at some point you got something that the toxicity in your body resulted in that. And
Ed, you were saying something else to me earlier. Can you kind of fill me in on that again?
Yeah, I'll be real. The biggest change that needs to happen is the change of mindset. Most of us that are fire and police officers are such type A personalities that we wait until we feel like we have a kidney stone.
The denial, the John Wayne effect.
It's not going to happen to us.
I love seeing the old grin.
This happens to other people.
Yes,
especially
it's not going to happen to us.
Hey, there's no cancer in my family. I'm never going
to
get cancer.
It's not going
to
happen to us.
We have to have a massive mind shift. A lot of this is going to be about, and if the cities want to curtail this off financially, they need to invest in getting preemptive screenings like crazy for fire and police officers. Because don't you think that when more and more of these studies come out over the next couple of years that we're doing on the fire side of things, that it's not going to trickle right over to the police department?
Of course
they're crazy if they ignore
it. Well, it would be so easy to start this in the academy, with an hour.
Yes, exactly.
In the beginning, that mindset.
An hour or two class, but then, and I mean that not being funny, I don't know what the requirements are with the fire department, but like, Phoenix PD, there is at least a week's worth of training every year to keep your certifications going and all that.
If you got
to go down and shoot your gun and qualify on the course and pass that test, you can certainly sit through an hour a year of don't forget, here's how to, and start documenting it yourself.
Absolutely.
There's no, you come home from a 10-hour shift, write it down. If you were on something where you, from inhaling stuff, being on a fire, accidentally poking yourself with a needle in somebody's pocket, you got to document this stuff yourself.
And Greg brought up a great point before the show started. About around 2000, we started talking about airborne pathogens, and we started finally waking up as it related to true exposures.
Right.
But that's being pricked, that's getting cut, that's those obvious exposures, not the day-to-day in, day-out stuff that we see.
Right. You think about it from even when you were in law enforcement, and I started in the 90s.
I started in 1901.
Okay, so early 1900s might have been a little bit different. But you think about it, when we would get into a fight with somebody or get tangled up with somebody that's bloody, you know, those things, you know, weren't documented appropriately.
Never.
You would basically throw dirt on it, and you'd go 10-8. Yeah. I'm back on duty and ready to go for the next call. And it's no different from a small agency to a Phoenix Police Department. That's just the way that it had been done. But as we have all grown, we have done better in documenting those things, especially with like your AIDS and bloodborne pathogens and those sort of things. And, so we do good in the police side of things, but it's typically after the fire department had started doing something that we jump on board with.
It's not proactive, it's reactive.
Always. Right. God, one of my biggest pet peeves. We're just in every scenario in this country, we are reactive and not proactive. But, you know, you could easily take a page out of, like, the NFL. 20 years ago, well, I'm a little older than that, 25 years ago, when I played football in high school, or those guys, you know, when you get your bell rung, you might have a slight concussion, go back in and play. Yeah. And 8 concussions that year didn't mean anything. Nowadays, it does. 8 concussions in a lifetime means something. It can lead to the CTE. It can lead to Alzheimer's. It can lead to, oh my God, how many of these guys are getting Lou Gehrig's, the worst disease in the world. And this would be a great model to follow. Let's start talking about that on that level with the documentation. And you know what? I still teach at our academy and know plenty of people who are decision makers, and this would be a great topic to sit around and say, listen, why can't we
add, a dialogue that
why
needs
can't
to be
we add an hour at the academy for both of us, fire and police, nationwide, and then yearly reminders, yearly incorporated into training, because that's how you learn, and the most important thing is to prevent this. I want to end with, first of all, I want to celebrate.
Yes, round of applause. Yes.
For as much as emotional you got about finding out you had cancer, the shock, being surreal, having to tell your family, please tell us about 2 weeks ago when you had a doctor do a 180 and say, you're cancer free. How did that feel?
Oh, it was amazing.
Didn't take long for that to soak in, right?
No, you know, like, it was...
You didn't lie to your wife about that, did you?
Yeah. And, right, I mean...
And you didn't lie to your wife that time, right?
No, she was in the office with me.
She didn't trust you anymore. I'm going. I want to hear this for my for myself. All right, we're going to do lightning round real quick. Just three questions, and don't think about it. First question.
You have to say real fast.
The first question that comes to mind... biggest lesson you learned in fighting what possibly a disease that could kill you?
Very simply, you're stronger than you'll ever know. Because I tell you that I walked out of that doctor's office with a death sentence. And I came to realize that cancer, it's just a word. It can't even form a sentence. Yeah. And you know what? My cancer may come back. And
you're gonna kick its ass.
It may kill me. And that's okay, because there is not a day goes by that I don't know it'll never beat me.
It'll never beat you. That's mindset. We talked about it with how to do the decon. We're talking about it all the way to cancer. Your mind can do everything. I've seen plenty of people who are told you have 6 months to live, and they die 2 weeks later because they don't believe in themselves, and they're trusting what a doctor said. And then I have people who are told they have 6 months,
and they fight every minute.
8 years later, they're going, no, I didn't. I'm good to go.
10%,
90%. Yes, 10%, 90%. Mindset is absolutely everything. Do you know Randy Rohde?
I do know Randy.
Went to high school together and served in the Air Force together, so make sure you give him he's a commander, right? Isn't he like some big shot important guy?
He is one of our commanders, and right. I actually just saw him yesterday.
Make sure you tease him a little bit for me. I met that guy. We went to the same high school, and small world, ended up in Eglin Air Force Base in Florida.
Then you can give me all the dirt on them.
There you go.
I'll take that back to the department with me.
I might have a few military stories there. Biggest thing you want to accomplish in getting the word about decon out. Outside, I understand you want to save lives. Why are you in this? Why did you sign up to do this?
I signed up to do this because as an honor guard member, I was sick and tired of carrying the caskets of my friends.
And with that, ladies and gentlemen, this has been an outstanding segment. We collectively are cancer-free mentally and emotionally right now. Let's carry that forward. Let's make a difference. Please, please check out firstrespondersdecon.com. Mm-hmm. Send emails, ask questions, and within your department, I know there's a lot of people out there listening right now wearing a uniform around this country. Go to people and talk about it. Think about where you've been and swallow some pride, be vulnerable, go to the doctor and just say, hey, could you check me out real quick? Because from this day forward, I'm going to be wearing clean gear, but I haven't for the past, who knows, 20 years. So that's awesome. God bless both of you guys for what you're doing.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
Way to go. Way to be a dad. That kind of stuff just, oh man, that gets me right in the field where it's supposed to. Thank you for sharing that.
Thanks for having me.
God, I love this show.
Right?
We will be right back, and it will not be as positive. Come on back.
More stories, inside guests, and true blue humor coming up on Batch Boys. We'll be back right after this.
Move over, AZ. Arizona's move over law requires you to move over or slow down when you drive past any vehicle pulled over with flashing lights. Remember, every vehicle, every time. Move over, AZ.
Sponsored by ADOT in partnership with the Arizona Broadcasters Association and this station.
I'll never forget
that. Never forget that moment.
As long as I live. My first call up ever as a member of the National Guard.
When we got to the armory, they briefed us on the wildfires. They were getting dangerously close to homes.
Helicopters were going out to drop water on the fires.
Guys in the unit were preparing for firefighting with local fire crews.
At that moment, I got my first taste of just how important the Guard is to my community.
See how the Guard can be an important part of your life at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Arizona National Guard. Aired by the Arizona Broadcasters Association and this station.
You're listening to Badge Boys with retired police sergeant Darren Birch and retired police officer Jason Schechterly. Now, back to the Badge Boys.
Welcome back to Badge Boys, everybody. Outstanding segment, Darren, as always. Incredible guests that you bring in, and that was a very emotional and happy ending story. We are going to talk about another positive story. We're going to start with hugs, not bullets. Sounds positive, right?
Yeah.
Hugs, not bullets. I'm kind of liking that, except for the fact that those words were uttered by Mexican President López Obrador, and he is saying this after 9 Americans, including 6 innocent little children, were ambushed and gunned down and burned by drug cartels in Mexico this past week. And you can read the story. It is absolutely horrific. You can look up the pictures. Every one of you out there, I would be shocked if anybody listening right now does not know what we are referring to, because it has been a major news story. You mentioned in the opening about whether it's targeted, whether it's wrong place, wrong time, which I'm not a big fan of the wrong place, wrong time thing. Anyway, what we are talking about is human beings who are evil, disgusting, motivated by money, greed, and a complete lack of respect for other human life. And they murdered not only women and children, but just really good people living really good lives, doing good things. And here's my question. This probably goes off the topic of cop talk, but because I opened it with what the president of Mexico said, bring that back to the disgusting politicians that we have in the United States of America right here. And here's my question. All you hear about is our politicians scream, cry, bitch and moan every day about the problems we cause around the world. However, when something happens to our own people in another country, crickets. You don't hear anything. We're hearing about it on the news, but nobody that I've heard from one of our local politicians all the way up to the president is like, here's what we're going to do, and we're going to fix this right now. I'd like to walk out to Luke Air Force Base and be like, hey, you see that those 8 F-16s that are on the ready? You need to go just blow up everything that the Mexican cartels had to do with. These people need to be killed and stopped from what they're doing. And this needs to be the catalyst that kind of starts that process, because you can't kill women and children, innocent women and children, and especially you can't kill Americans.
And that's the perfect segue for me, because it's talking about U.S. citizens. And the article starts, at least 9 U.S. citizens, including 6 children who live in a Mormon community in northern Mexico, were killed Monday in a hail of gunfire, according to family members and Mexican officials. This is what happened. One theory, which I agree with you, Jason, is that I think it's totally bogus. But one theory is the group was, it was just wrong place, wrong time. The other theory is that the group was intentionally targeted. Supporting that scenario about the ambush was the idea that this stretched miles and miles. This was not an oops. This was a targeted attack. Absolutely.
But this family has lived there, Darren, for like 3 generations.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They're dual citizenships.
This is community. That's why I just find it hard to believe that they didn't. The cartels, they knew who they were. They just wanted to, again, it's fear. We're going to put fear into everybody in the world because we run the show and we're going to do what we do. And if you, I mean, what they just did, that is going to put a fear into a lot of people.
And to your point about American involvement, the FBI has opened an investigation into the killings. Again, it happened Monday near the town of
Guy got arrested Visby. Yesterday with two of the hostages.
There you go. About 100 miles south of the Arizona border, the victims all left their community at the same time in three separate cars. Some were traveling back to the U.S. to visit and, you know, so forth, and others were going to a neighboring town. What's interesting about this is this was an extended family that was struck by Monday's violence, along with roots in the broader community of fundamentalist Mormons who first took up residence in Mexico's northern border regions in the late 19th century. Initially, the family's patriarch was part of a wave of religious rebels who headed south to practice polygamy, so forth. Today, those descendants scattered across the American West, those living in the La Mora, are successful pecan, chili, alfalfa, pomegranate. They're farmers raising their children and have dual American and Mexican citizenship. Only a few still practice the other stuff. One quote, which I love, it was a great place to raise kids, said Mr. Stratton, describing how he and his wife would pack their five children in their SUV each year for the eight-hour drive from Phoenix to La Mora. These were U.S. citizens that were gunned down. I'm with you, Jason. We need to take a stand. So I liked what the president said. I don't like what the Mexican president said.
Yeah, hugs, not bullets. Well, even what our president said, again, I don't care if you're Democrat or Republican. We are talking about human life, and we're also talking about getting rid of drugs that are killing a bunch of our kids right now anyway, and that's where it comes from. One of the more disgusting things that you see, and you see it all the time, doesn't matter if it's a school shooting, doesn't matter if it's something this egregious, everybody just likes to get on Twitter and say, oh, thoughts and prayers with the victims. You know how much I'd like to write back on Twitter and go, shut the fuck up.
We need more.
Your thoughts and prayers don't mean anything right now. If you are in a position to do something, you need to do something. And this should be a part of Cop Talk, because there are people out there who can do something about it, and because they have their own ideological differences. When you have a president of a country saying hugs, not bullets, after this happened, what is that going to solve? There's not even a plan in place. So what do we do about it as citizens to defend our own? And it's not even safe to go. Would you go to Mexico right now?
Oh, I tell vacation? My family and all my friends, do not go there.
No place.
You and that's based on Sinaloa.
And listen, I grew up in a time when, like, going to Tijuana, going to Rocky Point was like, man, we are going to have a great weekend. It's scary as hell now to even think of. I would never let my children go down there. And that has nothing to do with racism or the country overall.
Safety.
Because it's beautiful. It has to do with this one group that
there's a
kind
turf
of
war.
Runs the country.
There's a turf war going on over there.
Well, what about that whole thing where they just found a whole burial lot of victims? It was like 48 people buried.
Yep.
This just happened right before the shooting happened.
Well, not long ago down there, I want to go maybe 6 weeks ago, one of the chiefs of police was beheaded and left right there on the side of the road. We're almost talking about guerrilla warfare here. And even when I read yesterday, the one guy was arrested at the border with two hostages. Well, awesome that the hostages have been freed, but I'm not really feeling any better that this guy was arrested. And I know I used to be a cop, and I know these guys need to be removed from. They're oxygen thieves, and they are not doing the world any good. So what are we going to do to end? You can't put them all in jail. You can't catch them all. Something needs to be, like, we go fight for oil. We go fight for oil prices. We go and do all this stuff around the world. Why are we not taking care of this?
And I think it's going to even get worse. And the reason I feel that is because the more that we're dealing with marijuana and we're legalizing marijuana in our country, we're seeing that more and more happening. That's going to affect their product. That's going to affect their pocketbook. The same family member who was talking, who lives there, said family members have been facing new challenges, including the control of gasoline distribution by these criminal gangs. They're controlling gasoline, which has made farming operations more difficult. The cartels in Mexico seem to be looking for new sources of revenue, new criminal enterprises to make up for the losses related to the legalization of marijuana in parts of the United States. What we're dealing with is, from the cartels' perspective, they're ugly horrible, monstrous perspective, is they're a wounded animal looking for new revenue. And guess what? We've seen it in places like Russia where we see kidnappings, we see extortion, we see these things. These are going to happen. Right now, it's not a safe time to be in Mexico. Bottom line.
It's not a safe time to be in Mexico at all. And like the FBI opened the investigation, I know the CIA, they're incredible with their undercover operatives, and I'm sure certain things are taking place. But I'm telling you, it's just time to get a little more proactive, like we talked, not reactive.
So you don't think the Hugs is proactive enough?
Well, Hugs not bullets. No, I'd rather see our Navy SEALs sent down there and be undercover. And I don't care. Take these guys out one by one. We glamorize things. Did you see the headline last week that El Chapo, you know, probably the most famous kingpin, his wife is being courted and offered money to be on a reality show about cartel wives?
Seriously?
How in the world?
Insane.
And hey, millions of Americans will watch the show. Yeah. And the stuff gets glamorized. But this one, I mean, death is bad in any regard, but this one, what these people went through, and you said it went on for a while. There's kids involved. One of the women, one of the moms killed, was killed shielding her young child. And the child survived, but then they're lighting them on fire. It was
horrific.
It's too simplistic to say overkill, but they were trying to make a statement.
And clearly.
They did make a statement, so now it's time.
Let's listen.
For us, it's time for us to listen and say, that's it. Effective in November of 2019, your reign of terror is over and we're going to fix it. I have absolutely no confidence that our government or politicians will do that, because they're more concerned with hating each other than looking at that stuff, and that just, it makes me sick. So
there was something that I saw in the news the other day about that whole thing. One of the young boys, I think he's 13 or 14, actually got a group of the young children out and got them out into the brush and hid them.
And then he went for help.
Yes, but the thing is, they're still there witnessing this going on.
Oh, yeah.
It's traumatic to them, because not only are they in the middle, they're also survivors, but now they're going to have survivor's guilt. They're going to have to deal with the trauma of seeing their family murdered that way. How many kids are going to be messed up now that they've seen that? And just think about, I mean, speaking of reality TV, it's everywhere. Everybody is seeing this and seeing the trauma that everyone's going to suffer, especially young kids. They're going to see this, and it's going to weigh heavy on them.
And this turf war that's going on, that's causing them to want to kind of flex their muscles. We saw that in America with Al Capone in Chicago, and the violence that had to do with alcohol, you know, a different kind of drug, if you will.
Yeah.
And we had good leadership back then. We didn't have someone saying, hey, we should hug them. We should hug Al Capone. No, they dealt with it and they took care of business. And that's what Mexico needs to do with the cartel, and they need to help. To allow us to help them.
Well, I will just never understand. I mean, I know maybe I'm getting too old, but there's good and there's evil in this world, but I just will never understand how one human being and even if you are the shittiest person in the world, running drugs, making money, whatever, you still have feelings. You feel love for somebody and you have family that loves you. How do you look at another human being and just think, I can erase your life just because I have the power? That's just something I will never grasp my mind.
They become monsters.
It pisses me out. It is. It's truly. It's
sociopath.
It's monstrous. So,
we vented.
I would say that was more venting, because not jack shit's going to get done about it from our side. And it's hopefully at least the dialogue will continue. So we will come back with much better topics with heroic headlines and a few stupid suspect stories, and then hopefully a little inspirational close. So please join us.
More stories, inside guests, and true blue humor coming up on Badge Boys. We'll be back right after this.
I remember the moment. I'll never forget that moment.
As long as I live.
As long as I live.
Several of us were working to rescue a family.
The house collapsed on top of the cellar door and trapped them.
We had to use Humvees and heavy machinery to move massive trees and debris.
We got them out.
We helped a lot of people out.
It felt good to know I could really make a difference.
Because I'm a citizen soldier in the National Guard.
Be there the moment your community needs you. Learn more at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Arizona National Guard. Aired by the Arizona Broadcasters Association and this station.
Move over, AZ. Arizona's move over law requires you to move over or slow down when you drive past any vehicle pulled over with flashing lights. Remember, every vehicle, every time. Move over, AZ.
Sponsored by ADOT in partnership with the Arizona Broadcasters Association and this station.
You're listening to Badge Boys with retired Police Sergeant Darren Birch and retired Police Officer Jason Schechterly. Now, back to the Badge Boys.
Well, what a show. We've had two great guests talking about something to save lives. Then we talk about this horrific massacre in Mexico. So we need something to uplift our spirits. I do need a heroic headline from you, Jason. Desperately.
Well, we're going to stay along the lines of cancer. You know... that my heroic headlines are very rarely about the gunfights and running into fires. I like the emotional side of humanity. And this story comes to us from St. Augustine, the oldest city in the United States of America.
I did not know that.
Yes, indeed. Deputy Sergeant Napoleon Staggers and some other officers raised some money for a little trip. A St. Augustine boy battling cancer received a very sweet surprise on Friday after St. Johns County deputy heard about his cancer diagnosis. Arcolia Gilliard Jr., he's only 7 years old, and his family are going to Disney World for the first time thanks to Sergeant Staggers and other members of local law enforcement. Sergeant Staggers said he takes the time to get to know the members of his community he patrols, including the children at Woodlawn Terrace Apartments. He discovered the diagnosis of this young man, and these officers are paying for the Disney World trip for the whole family out of their own pockets.
Beautiful.
That's what officers do. They care about their communities. It's not just about taking bad guys to jail. And I love stories like that. So Sergeant Staggers and St. Johns County and all the rest of you, just way to go. Way to represent us. God bless you all. And I hope that that young man has the time of his life at Disney World. So, Darren, take us to the bowels of humanity. Please. Please.
I've been trying to find different themes. In the last couple of times, we found, you know, bodily fluid themes. We found all sorts of themes. This is revenge. Twisted, bad temper revenge. What I would call a temper tantrum. So the first headline is a Florida man, again with Florida.
Man, that's where they all come from.
All come from Florida. It's awesome. I love
it's
that
title. It's bizarre. I'm not making this up. Florida man slashes tires after woman takes his bingo seat. That's right. You heard it. Again, Florida man reacted poorly. And that's a major understatement to a woman sitting in his preferred bingo seat. Fred Smith, 82 years old, was arrested for criminal mischief on Monday after he used an ice pick to slash the tires of the van belonging to the 88-year-old Ethel, who was sitting in his seat. The tire slashing occurred at Lake Ashton Retirement Community Club. We're talking an old folks home. Old folks home, the gentleman got ugly. Smith was angry when he saw her sitting in his favorite seat, so he stormed out of the game and punctured two of her tires. She said, quote, "I didn't think anyone would be low enough to do that to my car because I didn't know I had any enemies in my life. I thought everybody was my friend, but undoubtedly I have one enemy." Yes, you do. And surveillance captured your enemy slashing her tire. He admitted to it, saying, quote, "It's quite frankly a childish crime," end quote. So Mr. Smith was booked at the Polk County Jail on a single count of criminal mischief. Stupid. Even at 82 years old, you can be stupid.
Over a bingo seat.
Okay, second stupid suspect story. Where do you think this stupid criminal hails from?
Another one?
Florida.
Yes, Florida man pulls gun on delivery man for being late. That's right. 55-year-old Florida man pulled a gun on a late-arriving furniture delivery team, saying, quote, "I've shot people for less," end quote. Michael Hilton was charged with two counts of aggravated assault. He was arrested. The delivery team called the sheriff's office when they were accosted. Delivery men called called Hilton to let him know they were on their way and that they were going to be late. But he was so upset that when they arrived, he pointed the gun at them. An arrest report stated that Hilton couldn't explain why he confronted the men with a gun. "I know, it's because you're a dick." with a bad temper. That's what it
wow.
is.
The statement "I've shot people for less" should raise the red flag in the cold case department. Like, yes, let's go find out who did you shoot for less?
Yes,
let's solve some crimes.
And now it escalates to the last third worst stupid suspect story. This next temper tantrum turns completely fatal. Man stabbed to death in Maryland at a Maryland's Popeyes after an altercation over the chicken sandwich.
Yes, seriously?
There is apparently a nationwide frenzy over the fried chicken sandwich at Popeyes. The deadly stabbing happened Monday, again, a lot of Mondays, at the Popeyes in Prince George's County in Maryland. This is bizarre. The fight initially began in line when a man cutting in front of another man when the altercation escalated and spilled outside in the parking lot. Quote, this is from the police now. Quote, we have been able to determine, preliminarily speaking, that this is related to the release of the chicken sandwich here at the restaurant. The individual was in line specifically for the sale of said chicken sandwich when another customer and he got into the altercation that ended with the victim being stabbed outside the business. When officers arrived at the scene, they found a 20-year-old man in the parking lot suffering from what became fatal stab wounds. He was transported to hospital where he succumbed to his injuries. Police are hoping the suspect turns himself in. We don't even know who the suspect is. The Popeye spokesman went on to talk about we're behind it, but I heard someone say that the chicken sandwich was these chicken sandwiches were to die for.
Oh Lord!
I you know, it's cop humor. I'm sorry, I had
to
go.
Well, apparently they're to go to jail for.
Yeah, is it ironic or is it just me that the guy cutting in line got stabbed? Is that I don't know.
No,
I don't know. Is that ironic?
When the guy gets arrested eventually, you imagine what the guys in prison are going to say to him. Would you go to jail for? Stabbed somebody over a chicken sandwich.
I haven't had one of these sandwiches yet, but I know people are suing Popeyes for running out. And there's a very good reason why they have run out. It's because the suppliers already have contracts with their competitors, you know, Chick-fil-A and other places. So they're not, they didn't have them. So
I'm sorry. No chicken sandwich is to die for.
I got to go to jail.
My God, get a life.
That's horrible.
Thank you.
Hopefully the
Thank
guy
you.
Will get caught and go to jail forever. So
Yes.
All right. My inspirational close this week. This happened, I always try to keep things fresh, and this happened very recently. So I had a business meeting last week, and the gentleman suggested a place called Juan's here in Phoenix. And listen, if you like Mexican food, I'm born and raised here in Phoenix. I'd never heard of this place. It's nondescript, sits at 15th Street and Thomas in Phoenix. And it was incredible. So I would suggest you go there. But anyway, I leave and I go home and I find myself sitting. I got a lot on my mind, of course, and all of a sudden I realize I'm sitting at the exact spot that I was hit.
Oh my gosh.
At 20th Street Thomas at the red light.
Wow.
And so I pulled out my phone and I took a picture of basically what was almost the last thing I ever saw at one point. And I was, you know, I've talked to everybody over the years. It's one of my favorite things to talk about. The people who have been there, I love their points of view, and I'm picturing my car being on fire under the overpass. I'm seeing in the distance where the fire truck was sitting. And as I'm soaking this all in, all these years later, I thought about the late Dr. Sean Stevenson. If you don't know who he is, you should look him up. He just led an incredible life. He died about 3 months ago, unfortunately. But he suffered a rare genetic disease that caused him a lot of problems throughout his life. Finally succumbed to that. But what he always said in his speeches was, this didn't happen to me, it happened for me. And when I thought about that, I also realized what a peaceful way to view and live life. And then that rolled into, I'm getting ready to go to Vegas with my 17-year-old son to watch him play baseball. The son who shouldn't be here wouldn't be here if it wasn't for what took place in that intersection. And the perspective in positive ways just came
the miracle after
flooding in. And to think about him, to think about my other kids, to think about what I've gotten to do, the travels, the people I meet. I mean, tomorrow I'm going to Reno, and then the day after that I'm going to Chicago to speak to the concerns of police survivors. I just put together all the pieces over the last 18 years, and it's not always going to be easy, but it is always going to be worth it. You just got to be patient. God bless all of you. Thank you, Darren, Robin, for another great show. I look forward to next week. I love you guys. I love this more than anything. God bless all of you, and be safe and be proactive in something. Do something to be proactive and make this world better.
Make a difference.
Leave it better than you found it. We'll see you next week.
Batch Boys. Thanks for listening to Batch Boys. Stories, insights, guests, and true blue humor with retired police sergeant Darren Birch and retired police officer Jason Schechterly. Batch Boys, heard weekly and worldwide on Star Worldwide networks and all mobile devices. Batch Boys.